You look great, by the way. Did you lose weight too lately? You look lean
as hell. So check this out. I go to a new place, the place I've been going to for a very, very long time. And I'm telling you, I live by it. It's called Legacy Fit.
Bro, I was waiting for you to say something else.
I mean, it ain't no secret. It ain't no secret.
First of all, thank you for doing this.
It's good to be here.
Almost all my guests, I have y'all because you mean something to me. You know, right. It's like there's been some kind of interaction that has meant a lot to me. And one of the things that I've always recognized with you is that, and it inspires me, is that your attitude. Mm-hmm. There's something about your attitude. Every time you come here, it's positive. Even in your toughest moments, mm-hmm. even when you're going through stuff, like you still show people respect, have a good time, mm-hmm. smile, say the right things. And like, that's very powerful to somebody that, and you know me, like that lives, I'm a very emotional person and
yeah.
and I wear my feelings on my sleeves. But as a business owner and being dealing with people, you can't do that all the time. Like right. you have to represent yourself in a positive way.
I think for you, you know? I wouldn't say you wear your feelings on your sleeve. I would say you wear your feelings on your cape. Yeah. You got more of a Superman ego than a regular Joe. Too, right? Yeah. So start using you wear your ego on your cape.
That's a good analogy for sure. Well, I want to jump in on some things that I've been dying to ask you. And
shoot.
Because I never want to like interrupt your workout or
yeah, of course,
disrupt anything. You because that's your time. I want you to take us back a little bit to your playing days.
Right.
Because for me, that's like something that I admire, obviously. And you had a heck of a career.
Yeah.
And I don't think people really know that.
I mean,
you know, as old heads, don't get the love like that. So take us back a little bit of, let us know a little bit about your career, where you started, right. you know, let people know, because I would love to hear more about it.
So, you know, I'm from Miami and I learned to play football in the mean parks, these little league parks in Miami. And football in Miami is everything, yeah. right? When you start in little league, I actually, my first Little League football experience, just first time playing football, you know, many of you may or may not know, but Randall Hill, who was a first round receiver that played at University of Miami, his father was my coach. And he ended up being my roommate at University of Miami. I ended up playing against him in high school, running track against him, you know, coming out of high school. He was the number one corner in the state. I was number two. And so we always, you know, but playing little league with him and learning football with him and his dad, obviously his dad's the coach. So Randall played every position that there was that touched the ball.
Right.
I played offensive lineman my first time. My first time. And after about three, four games, his dad moved me to defensive end. And the first time they put me in, I got a sack and the whole team went crazy and I went crazy. And I was like, this is the sport for me. But, you know, playing
what
football.
What grade was that?
So that was roughly 9 years old. I was 9 years old when I first started playing football. And then after that, I went to another park and that park was called Richmond Perrine Park. And I would say that was where I learned how to truly play football, and that's where I learned the discipline. That's where the coaches would grab you by your face mask and shake you around.
I remember those days.
And coach would stop practice and say, get the bull in the ring, you turn that hit down, let's do it again, let's do it again, yeah. let's do it again. And by then I was playing linebacker. So from linebacker, as time went on, I didn't grow much. They put me at corner, but I still had that linebacker mentality. So, you know, I went in high school and basically lost 4 games in 4 years in high school. And I got the hardest hitter award in high school.
What high school did you go to?
I went to Southridge High School.
All right.
And then I went and played in the Florida Georgia All-Star game. And Emmitt Smith was on the team. A lot of great players on the team. I got MVP for that game. And then I went to the University of Miami and won every game that I played in college, except another four games. So I only lost four games in college. I won two national championships, and my senior year, I got the hardest hitter award again. And I was 178 pounds, 5'9". On my team was many, many great players, as you know, back in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s, University of Miami was really a powerhouse of a team. But, you know, a lot of people talk about the 30 for 30 hit that I had on the kickoff. That was just a part of my makeup, but that started in Little League with my linebacker coach.
Okay.
Never to turn down a hit. When I got to the NFL, I was hitting everybody in my first training camp. And I remember my defensive back coach called me in the room. I'm like, I don't know. He better not be cutting me because I'm smashing dudes out here.
Yeah.
Smashing. And he pulled me in the room and he said, "You're not going to play long playing like this. I need you to go for the ball. Don't go for the man." I used to let the guy catch the ball in the air just so I could catch him and dump him on his head.
Yeah.
Because that's what growing up in Miami football was about.
Right.
The whole crowd going, ooh.
Yeah.
I lived for that. I didn't live to get the ball. So my whole mentality had to change to become an NFL corner. They don't care how hard you hit. They want the ball.
And well, turnovers, right?
Turnovers. So then my mentality changed. I started intercepting the ball, started going for strips. I was still hitting people.
Yeah.
But it's a difference hitting somebody at 180 pounds and the people you're hitting are typically 205, 210, right. Running. It just started hurting a lot more. It started hurting a lot more, but I had a great career. I won two Super Bowls. I have the longest.
So you got two national titles.
And two Super Bowls.
And two Super Bowl titles. Super Bowl champions. That's amazing.
And I have the longest punt return in NFL history.
I tell people that all the time.
Still stands today. And I got...
Was it 103.
103 yards. Hasn't been broken.
That's amazing.
And, I got an ESPY award for the best player of the year. And, you know, achieved a lot of great things in my career. Yeah. And I give it all to my little league. That particular team changed my life. And sometimes that's what it is. Sometimes it's just one person that comes across the journey. And that one person has an impact. Someone always comes across your life. No matter who you are, no matter what industry you're in, someone comes across your life that will change your life. It's just up to you to decide whether you are going to take that in or not take it in.
Do you think that kind of like is why you walk and talk the way you do? Because I feel like that's how you live your life. Like it's very obvious that you're trying to leave an impression on people.
Exactly.
And to me, that's a direct relationship to how you were influenced by that one person.
Right. Now that one person got me going.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of other coaches also that taught me, you know, take advantage of every opportunity, right? Control what you can control. I tell this is one of my main messages when I taught the kids. Whatever college you go to, whatever high school you go to, whatever NFL team you end up, there's going to be a percentage of your success that will be dictated on what you do. It's not going to be about who you're going up against, their skill versus, it's just the decisions, the easy decisions that you make that won't take any physical like effort. Is just a mental thing.
Mm-hmm.
Waking up in the morning, being to meetings on time, you know, going to practice, making sure you're not late for practice, knowing your playbook. A lot of guys in the NFL that the public doesn't see this, but a lot of guys in the NFL get cut before the first game and you wonder, man, they didn't even give him a chance to play in the game. Well, he probably didn't know his playbook. How do you play Little League, high school, college, get to your ultimate goal, and then you show up late for a meeting? This is the ultimate that before you even got drafted or ended up on that team, you would have said, man, I'll do anything to play in the NFL. But the one day they ask you to be at the facility at 7 a.m., you come walking in at 7:30, and then they cut you, and you go home, and you have to sit there in front of your mom, your friends, and say, I got cut because I came late. Why did you come late? It's got to be a few things. You didn't wake up, but why didn't you wake up? Maybe the night before you were drinking, smoking, hanging out. So I just made sure I took care of everything that I was supposed to take care of. Your skill against my skill, that's a different. You may just be faster. You may be stronger. You may be quicker. But I'm going to beat you because I'm going to know the playbook. I'm going to take care of the little things. And that's how I live my life. That's why I come to the gym every day. I said, this is something I can do. This is something that I have control of.
Right.
Right. So I do. I make sure I'm very positive with my guys, my associates. I bring them in. I tell them every time they're telling me something that may be pulling them backwards or they feel negative about. I say, listen, let's get in the gym. Let's get you back on a very positive, you know, track, journey, and things will work out. Right. You gotta believe in God.
I was just talking to my wife about this. Like, we literally become the decisions that we make daily. That's who we become.
Yes.
And everyone has a choice to make.
Yes.
And to your point, like, whether it's your job or school or sports team or whatever it is, being on time, staying late, doing the things that are required, these are all choices. And if we just make the right choice at the right time, most of the time that's building the blocks of our life that will eventually will set up our foundation.
Yeah, I tell my guys, my NFL guys that just get into the NFL, I say to them, you got an off day on Tuesday, but what do you do on your off day? You're in another city. You don't even know. You just got there.
Yeah.
What are you going to do on your off day? Stay home and watch TV? Take your off day and use it as another day to get better. Go to the facility. Watch film. Ask your coach, can you watch film with him?
Mm-hmm.
Go see the trainer. Get extra therapy. Go into the weight room. Do some extra weights. Treat the facility like a country club. Go in the hot tub. Go in the cold tub. When it's time for them to make a decision between you and another player that doesn't show up on Tuesday, who do you think they're going to pick?
100%.
It's not physics.
Right.
It's not chemistry.
Yeah.
It's the simple things. The people that make the decisions have emotions. They're human.
Yeah.
They love anything that is going to help them even be successful.
They love effort.
Effort. The more you do and the better you look, your coach is going to get rewarded for that.
Right.
So who do you think he's going to keep when it's between you and another guy that's playing just, he may even be playing a little bit better than you, but your coach is going to know he's going to get more from you in the long run than a guy that doesn't come in that's just leaning on his physical ability. It's all about effort. And we feel attracted to people that we see giving effort. There's 100%. That emotion is there.
Yep. One thing that stood out to me, so we have this thing at Legacy we always talk about is that do more than is required. So like, yeah, you have your responsibilities, but what are you doing on top of that to set yourself apart?
That's so great. You know? My saying is over-deliver.
Over-deliver.
Which is the exact same thing.
Same thing, right?
I tell guys, over-deliver. When you have an appearance and this guy is paying you to show up and do an appearance, bring him a jersey. He doesn't know you're not bringing him a jersey.
Exactly.
But when you bring him a jersey, you just over-delivered. He's going to go home and say to his wife or his associates, this guy brought me a jersey. Let's extend his deal one more year. That $150 jersey just made you another $200,000-$300,000.
Take me back to, I'm sure there's many of these because you played for a long time, but like, was there ever a game where you just like, you had to reach down deep to get over, like maybe you were down by 20 and y'all crawled back. Do you ever remember a time, like particular game experience where you, and maybe not even just you, but the team had to like really rally behind? Is there anything that sticks out to you?
Well,
because I always love those kind of stories.
For us, it wasn't necessarily a particular game. But, you know, I played on one of the greatest defenses in the history of the NFL, the Baltimore Ravens. right? We gave up 168 total points in the season from the beginning of the season to the Super Bowl. When you think about 168 points,
that's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. I mean, we must have goose egged or what people call donut teams.
Yeah.
Maybe three or four teams, they didn't score a point. And so for us, the challenge, there were some games where we held teams, we stopped them from going past the 50-yard line. Think about that.
Yeah.
So as the season kept going on, the challenge was to not let them score. We would say to the offensive side of the ball, we would say to the kicker, just give us 3 points and we'll do the rest. So
I remember that year too.
Yeah. It was an incredible season of going
Who
out.
Who was the quarterback then?
Trent Dilfer was the quarterback.
Exactly.
I could tell you.
I couldn't even remember.
I could tell you stories about that. And Trent's a great guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I got nothing bad to say about Trent, but the offense clearly wasn't, you know, where it should have been.
Right.
But our defense was the best in the league, and we were trying to make a statement in history. And as we were going every game, we started to realize that we're not only a great defense, but if we do this, we'll become marked in the history books.
Yeah.
So going out to the game, before the game even started, we had an expectation within our minds, meaning we hunkered down when they were getting close to the 50. We hunkered down.
Yeah.
It was an expectation, not only with the 11 starters, but even the guys, the backups on the sideline. And it was an amazing feeling that you're playing, you're not on a great offensive team, but you're on a defensive team that can make history. So every game that season became every game just became a higher and higher pressure and expectation until we got to the Super Bowl and we dominated the Giants. They didn't score. We just dominated them on defense. They couldn't get a first down.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, the offensive players on the Giants going, oh my God, you guys are so good. And this is the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And they're already, when a guy starts complimenting you in the game, they're done.
Oh, they're done.
They're done.
Yeah.
When they say, man, you guys are you know, they're ready for the buses. They're ready to take the showers. Yeah. They're ready to go.
Right.
This was like second quarter. They were saying, man, we can't even get a first down on you guys.
Do you think y'all were the best ever?
I think we were the best ever.
The argument is the 1985 Chicago Bears.
The Bears. That's the argument.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of great players.
Yeah. I've heard that argued out. But yeah. I'm in agreement with you. I think y'all are the best for sure.
I mean, it would, you know, if you think about the just the stat of points allowed. If you just think about that, and we didn't have the amount of big names that the Bears had.
Yeah,
you know, Ray Lewis was our biggest name, and
huge.
But just across the board, we had some great players. But so who was
the opposite corner from you?
So it was me, Dwayne Starks.
Was Ed Reed there then?
Ed Reed was not there.
Not there. Wow.
Ed Reed wasn't there. Ed Reed came the next year.
Okay.
Ed Reed came.
Can you imagine him on that team? It would have been not even fair.
But we had Chris McAllister was the other corner. Yep. We had Rod Woodson was back there at safety. We were an amazing team, and you know, Shannon Sharp on offense, a real talker and a real leader. We were a great team, and every game was just a goal to dominate this offense and we got 3 points. Let's go. We were going to halftime. We got 3 points. We're good. We're gonna win this one.
Yeah,
was the mentality. It was an amazing season.
How would you say the league has evolved, you know, because when I think of that defense and when I think of Ray Lewis and even yourself, you even said it earlier with the physicality of it, do you find that the league has gone a little away from that just with all the new rule changes and stuff?
Oh, 100%. The league has changed because the health aspect, the CTE, the concussions that guys, and I believe 100% it's the right move.
Right. But it does change the game, right?
It changes the game. Yeah. It's more now of a, passing game. It's a higher scoring game. You know, I just say we allowed 168 points. That's never going to happen.
Point. Exactly. So that's was
gonna,
my point.
That's never going to happen.
That's never going to happen. That's never going to happen. Like, it's going to be impossible.
I remember hitting the running back. I think we were playing Tennessee, one of those teams. And I remember the rest of the defense hitting me while I was hitting the running back. Like, and I swear to you, Manning, I felt like I was in a car accident.
Yeah, I believe it.
I must have flipped 3 or 4 times. I had no clue where I was. My head was ringing. And I said to myself, I remember saying to myself, I'm glad I don't play offense because you can't do that today.
Yeah.
Today, you just can't crush people. You know, it's still a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But the defense is at a, it's as disadvantage.
100%.
You no longer could go run full speed, put your head down and try to run through somebody.
Yeah, I was just about to say, my dad literally taught me to take the crown of my helmet and put it in people's throats.
Yes.
Like that was how you tackle.
Yes.
My and coach, if you didn't tackle like that, you weren't tackling.
My coach told me put it in the person's jaw. Yeah. Says, if you hit them in the jaw, they're going to be done.
Right.
And I used to just full speed.
Light them up.
And light them up. And today,
you can't do that. You can't.
I would have got kicked out of many games. Right.
Remember Chuck Cecil?
Yeah, Chuck Cecil would have been done.
He would have been kicked out of the league after the first game.
And we're having a good time talking about it. It's great. A lot of people ended up with CTE. A lot of people ended up taking their own lives. A lot of people ended up not having a great quality of life for a sport that they loved. And the balance now is just to change that so that guys could have an amazing career and still have the quality of life after football and keep football entertaining. That's the ultimate goal for the NFL, and I understand it. And I'm a huge football fan. Football's going to always be number one in my heart. And I'm for anything that the NFL does that helps guys with their health, but also keeps the game very exciting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was definitely needed. I mean, we were heading into... It was getting ugly there for a while, so you have to make changes.
You got to make changes,
and it's part of history.
And a lot of defensive players say, "Hey, it's hard to, you can let up sometimes." Like as soon as that guy misses the ball, I used to take a step or two and smash him. But if you can't do that, you definitely have the ability to let up. A lot of guys, I can't let up.
Yeah, you can. And that's why you're so athletic too.
Exactly.
You can stop on a dime. You can adjust your body.
Or you can adjust just that little move right there, and you go from killing a guy to where he just kind of just rolls over.
Because you know what you're doing.
You're 100%.
You're in complete control. That's why you're a professional athlete.
Landing on the quarterback. Yeah, exactly. Doing all that. I did all that. You can 100% control it. So I'm happy about it.
Anybody that you guys have taken on recently that you think is going to be like really, really special from a signing standpoint?
Man, yeah. I mean, just this draft, Jalen Carter is going to be special. He's a special kid. He's an amazing, powerful, old school. All the adjectives that you give to great young players, he has.
Yeah.
Right? One of them is, he's a country boy, right? When you say that, when you use that term country boy for anyone in the NFL, they're tough MFs.
Yeah.
They're just, you're like, this dude will cook roadkill, right? Like, this is how tough he is.
Yeah.
He's a tough guy that is just cockstrong.
Where's he from?
He's from Florida. He's from... somewhere upstate Florida.
Okay.
It's just eluding my mind right now, the name of his hometown. Same hometown as Warren Sapp. And just a tough guy that is quick, fast, loves football. And just, I think he's going to be a guy that at the next level is going to dominate early. right? He's going to dominate very early. He's going to play
early.
And
who did he get picked up by?
The Eagles.
The Eagles. Oh, wow. Yeah,
and they already had.
I was about to say, they're already loaded.
Super Bowl team, great defense. And the Eagles picked up maybe 8 guys from the Georgia championship team. I mean, I don't know how the rest of the NFL allowed that. We're talking about the number one defense in college, and the Eagles picked up most of their guys. And then also traded with the Lions to get Swift, the running back that was at Georgia the year before. I'm like,
is there a connection there, or is it just coincidence?
You know, listen, I think if you are a general manager and you are evaluating players, and you look at a particular team in college and you can say to yourself, this is the best defense in college. Individually, they may not all be the best at their position, but when they play together, they play well.
Right.
And I think that's what the Eagles decided to do, which is unusual because the NFL typically rates guys
the best players
and they pick different puzzle pieces from different parts of the country and try to make them fit.
Right.
I think the Eagles this year decided we're not going to try to make puzzle pieces fit. We're going to just try to get the guys from the number one defense. They already fit. They're already like working together.
Yeah.
And let's see what they can do.
It's an interesting strategy.
It's a great strategy.
Like, it sounds amazing.
It's like, why didn't you do that before?
Right.
Right?
Right.
So
I know there's some people say, I've heard this, and again, it might be hearsay, but I've heard like a lot of guys stay away from Alabama players because of how much they go through it, like during their careers.
So Alabama,
is there truth to that? Or?
Yeah, so Nick Saban is known for how tough practices are.
Oh, okay.
He's one of those coaches that I've never been to a practice, but the word is he's an extremely tough coach. He doesn't care if you're a star or not. You're going to practice. You're going to do things the way you're supposed to do things.
Yeah.
And that's it. He yells at the players and he yells at the coaches. One of the main reasons he didn't have the success in the NFL is because he brought that college old school coaching to the NFL, and you just, when you got guys making millions of dollars,
grown ass men with families,
translate.
That's not gonna work.
It just didn't translate. Yeah. And so he went back to college, and it works for college. He works those guys. They're always a great, you know, great team in terms of, you know, cardio and being ready for the game. And you're not going to see an Alabama game, Alabama player be out of shape or anything like that. But he does go hard on his guys. And so a lot of the Alabama guys, you know, there's this notion that they're not going to have an extremely long career.
Right.
Yeah. Because they work so hard in college.
Yeah. I've heard that before.
Yeah. So. You know, you can't, I don't have anything bad to say about Nick Saban. I can't even like complain about anything he does, because when you win as much as he's winning, whatever formula he's doing, whatever little juice he's getting out of that orange, he's getting it. And
I think when you look at a guy like Nick, and you can always like critique, say how he does something,
right?
But we can all agree on why he does things is for the right reason. So like his attention to detail, his consistency, like all the things that make you great, he does.
Right.
Like that one documentary with him and Bill.
Bill, yeah, they're great friends.
It was great. Like it was just great to see to me, what I got out of that.
And Belichick is the same.
Yeah.
Belichick's a hard-nosed guy, practice. You got to practice. He doesn't care who you are. You better know the playbook.
Right.
And we're going to practice, and we're going to practice hard. And you're going to, you know, go in the weight room and work your butt off in the weight room. And, you know, it's kind of like Gronkowski, you know,
That was one of y'all's main guys.
Yeah, Gronk was one of our main guys, and Gronk was a hard worker. But even to break Gronk in terms of like the workout was just too much. He's and Gronk is a hard-nosed player.
Yeah.
But to come off the field on Sunday where you are trying to run through linebackers, trying to run through safeties, blocking defensive ends, and you're going full speed and the ball's being thrown to you, and then to go back after the game and go back to the facility the next couple of days and you're working in the weight room, you know, doing all the stuff right. in the weight room, and you're not getting any rest. That was kind of one of his, you know, one thing that rubbed Gronk was, man, it's just, it just wore my body. It wore his body down.
Did you ever meet Brother Oliver, Coach Oliver from Alabama?
No,
no. So he was one of my coaches.
Okay.
And he was actually phenomenal from a, like a player standpoint, because he didn't believe in hitting during practice at all.
Wow.
So we were like, the year that he was our head coach, we did shells like almost every practice.
Oh, wow.
Like shorts and shells.
You guys are lucky.
And we loved it.
Yeah.
And then he would always be like, you know, if you don't know how to tackle, then you shouldn't play football.
Yeah.
Like, that's wow. what he would say.
So, you know, at University of Miami, Jimmy Johnson, I believe I went through some of the hardest coaches in college and in the NFL.
Yeah.
Like Jimmy Johnson was one of the hard, like we grinded so hard. I remember just spring ball, like sleeping in the locker room.
Ooh.
Like sleeping in the locker room because you were too tired to walk across campus to grab something to eat and come back. You know, summer practice, you know, summertime, get fall practice for the season, just grinding,
yeah.
like sleeping, sometimes not even getting out of your pants. And then for me, I got drafted to the Rams and John Robinson was the coach. And that was the last team, because that year, the new old CBA was still in. So you
okay.
can practice as much as you wanted.
Oh my God.
So, but every other team was doing two-a-days. We were the only team doing three-a-days. When I say three-a-days, your practice ended at 8 p.m. at night. And we used to shower. Sometimes we didn't shower. Sometimes we would walk to the dorm,
go and pass out, basically.
Pass out with our practice pants on.
Ooh.
And
what time did you have to be back the next day?
Next morning, you had to be back at 7 a.m. 7 a.m. for meetings.
Right.
But that was the first time in my life that I saw guys give up on their dream to play in the NFL. By 3, 4 a.m. in the morning, they would sneak to their cars and they would leave.
No way. Just dip.
Dip.
They just couldn't handle the work.
They couldn't handle the grind.
Did y'all do?
John Robinson would be like, where's so-and-so? Yeah. Where's so-and-so? And they find out, you know, hours later, his mom is telling the coach, he's, you know, he's driving back.
Oh,
he's about
God.
8 hours away. He's coming home. He said he couldn't do it. And like,
yeah.
you got to think about that pressure to three-a-days. But for me, I think what saved me was, and that year we went 1-15, by the way, because the team was done. But
y'all were too tired to play.
Right. The thing that saved me was just the year before I was coached by Jimmy Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
So the experience of playing in that type of practice and just knowing that there was no giving up and going to practice and having a pride in my mind that I'm going to out practice these guys who are complaining. In my mind, I'm like, this is nothing.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that it was summertime and it felt like it was 75 degrees.
I was because you're used to Miami heat.
Like, I was used to the Miami heat.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is nothing. 3 days. Yeah, this is nothing. I mean, my body was tired.
Yeah.
But I knew it could have been a lot worse. So for a lot of guys that came from different colleges that didn't have that championship mentality, mm-hmm. they were the ones that.
Did y'all do winter workouts in Miami?
Winter workouts?
Remember like, so at Auburn we had winter workouts, and winter workouts were like, you had to show up in the Coliseum at 5 a.m. And if you were late, like if it was 5:01 a.m., then you ran stadiums the rest of the day. Oh. The rest of the day.
Oh, that's tough. And but I got something for you. We had something. we did something like that where you got in trouble if you were 5 minutes early. Jimmy Johnson wanted you there 15 minutes early.
Okay. Deion Sanders.
Came running in and you still beat the clock, but Jimmy Johnson was in there, you were in trouble.
Yeah.
He said, you got to beat me in here. And we used to have something called a sick field. Like if you are injured, majority of colleges I know, you'd be in the
training room. Right.
He made you, no matter what your injury was, you had to be working while the team is practicing. If you had a bad arm, you were riding the bike and running with your sling.
Right.
If you had a bad leg, you were doing
the hand thing, the hand bike.
And you wished you weren't.
Right.
You wished you were at practice.
Yep.
Jimmy would say, there's a difference between being hurt and being injured. I need to figure out which one of you guys are hurt and which one you're injured. And this is the way I do it. I mean, he was one of the toughest coaches that I have ever, him and John Robinson were the two toughest coaches I ever had.
And when you were at Baltimore, it was Harbaugh?
Harbaugh.
How was he as a coach?
Well, you know, he was a tough coach. He was a tough coach, but he wasn't, you know, it wasn't like.
Comparatively speaking.
But my first time in Baltimore, I was with Billick.
Okay.
Brian Billick. So he was the one that was there during.
He was more fun too, right?
Billick was more of a offensive coach.
Okay.
So he did not mess with the defense. He didn't even come over to our side of practice.
And y'all's defense coordinator was
Marvin Lewis.
And who was
Marvin
real
Lewis
hands
is the man.
On. Yeah.
He is the man.
Yeah.
Super hands on, but
Billick, genius mind too.
Yeah. I could count on my hand how many times I spoke to Billick during the season.
Really?
Serious. He stayed on offense. His thing was the quarterbacks. He was a quarterback coach. He was the offensive coordinator. He just stayed over there and he let defense do their thing. And by the time half the year, you don't want to mess with the defense.
Yeah.
By the time half the year came, you just, they're obviously doing
something right.
I don't need to even go over there.
Yeah.
And so he didn't even come to the side of the building.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy.
They talked about that, the Bears offense and defense, that 1985 team. They said that the offense didn't have anything to do with the defense, like nothing.
And that was how it was for us.
Yeah.
Zero. We didn't even. Even when we sat in our team room, defense sat on one side, offense sat on another side. When we went on a plane, same thing. When we got on two different buses, defense bus, offense bus, we just did not have anything to do with them. You know, even in the building, the only time at our facility, the only time we really saw offense was during the cafeteria.
Really?
Other than that, they were on another side of the building.
It's funny that you say that, though, because like when I was at Auburn, now that you mention it, we were very much similar to that, too.
Separated.
It's kind of interesting, right?
It's interesting, but they don't do that anymore.
Yeah, no?
No, many teams, you know, you still have defense. Oh, obviously, defense goes to defense, but
a little bit more togetherness.
Yeah, it's a little bit more togetherness, and a lot of our guys have friends on the team, and it's the opposite, you know, maybe it's a DB that has a receiver as a friend. You didn't have much, you know, DBs hung with DBs, receivers. It was super old school. You know, coaches didn't want, I mean, the coaches would cuss at the other coaches on the other side of the field. You know what I mean? Like they didn't even want nothing to do with it. The offense coach didn't want anything to do with defense, and it was competition just among the coaches.
Well, I remember in college, we used to scrimmage each other. So it was like, there was a lot of talking. Like,
even the coaches would be arguing among was,
and lots of fights.
And like, they don't have, it's not like that anymore.
No,
it's not like that anymore. It's a lot different.
So speaking of different, what is your take on all this how do you say it?
NIL.
NIL stuff.
So NIL is name, image, likeness. It's just basically marketing for college players.
Okay.
You own your name. Manny Sumner.
Yeah.
You own anything that your image, they take a picture of you, own it. Anything to do with your likeness. If somebody draws a cartoon character of you and tries to use it to promote something, you own that. That's what you own. For many years, the NCAA would make money off of guys, name, image, and likeness.
Right.
And you can't do that. You can make money off of the jersey. You can make money off of your marks, but you can't take a guy's personal brand and make money from it and tell him he can't make money from it. Right. So
I remember, and I know this probably happened with you, like, you remember when we were in the video games?
Yep.
Like, we're in the video game. You can play with yourself, but we're not making any money off of it.
Now, so, everything, you know, guys are in college are making money for their name, their image. You know, you can't go and do a commercial and wear the school colors or wear their jersey, but you can, but if you're a good player, people know you by your name and they know you by your face, and you can go and make money in marketing.
Does this help your job, or does
it helps us because we get to build a relationship with a college player coming out of high school.
Okay.
When in the past we weren't even able to talk to them until their junior year. They weren't, you know, guys can't go in the NFL.
Because it was illegal, right?
It was illegal. Yeah, there was rules saying you can't, you know, you in the NFL, you cannot leave college and go in the NFL until you're 3 years removed from high school. So we couldn't really talk to you until you were 3 years removed from high school.
Right.
So that's how it was. But now, since there's NIL, you can't stop an agent from helping a college kid with his NIL. So we opened up a department, an NIL department, and we're able to actually sign.
What's the earliest you can sign people now?
What's the
earliest you can sign someone?
You can sign them as soon as they finish their high school last game. So they don't even have to be enrolled in college.
Wow.
Because if you sign them in high school, they forfeit the rest of their forfeit any other sports that they may be playing. So meaning I can't sign a kid if he has one more high school game. Because as soon as I sign him, he's ineligible.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, but if he's finished with his college, his high school season, and you sign him, and he's not playing another sport, you can sign him.
Oh, wow.
So, and the earlier the better, because you're building relationship. You know, they're learning how you work. You're learning how they work. You're helping them through their college, making them money. You know, they ask questions about what's going on in the locker room and relationship with the coach. So we're able to help them micromanage the journey. And in that regard, it's better, because by the time it gets to that third year, when they can go into the NFL, they pretty much are close with you. You're friends with them. You know, it's understanding that you're going to represent them. It's not 100%, but it's way better than showing up to meet them for the first time, you know, his junior year, when a few months later you got every agent knocking on his door, and a few months later, you know, he's going into the NFL draft and he's got to make a decision. It's an easier decision for him to make once he has a relationship.
And it must help too, your background and your experience, that guys can like really relate to you.
Yeah,
like,
I relate to a lot of the guys because I played, and you know, I played in the NFL. I was where they want to be. I won Super Bowls. They love to talk about the Super Bowls. Yeah. They love to talk about the games. And just, you know, the money that's in the NFL, how to manage your journey, how to play as long as you can possibly play. As I told you earlier, you know, on Tuesday, I never took a Tuesday off. The 11 years of my career, I went in on Tuesday. I made sure if they're going to cut me, they're going to know that I'm going to feel like I knew I did every possible thing. So all these experiences that I've had, I tell all my guys. And, you know, I try to, it helps them stay in the league as long as possible.
And how many guys y'all have on your roster?
We represent on average 100 players every year.
Amazing.
And that's just NFL, but we represent probably about 30 NIL guys.
Awesome. And how long you been doing this?
I've been doing this 25 years.
Wow.
So I've been retired from the NFL for 25 years. Literally 2 months after I retired, I started working as an agent. I got no time to relax or take a break. It's just.
But it was something that you knew you wanted to do? Was this something that kind of fell into your lap?
I knew I wanted to stay in football, right? So when football was coming to an end, I said, I want to do marketing for guys, because I had already started doing marketing for guys while I was playing.
Okay.
Because I had a connection with the NFL PA, which is the union, and all of their partners and sponsors wanted to get connected with NFL players. Well, I was a way that I could help them connect to the players that I'm around every day.
Right.
Back then, we didn't have social media. There was no cell phones. So I would talk with them, and she would say, well, we have this sponsor, and they're looking for this player. And I would set it all up and make money while I was playing.
Oh, yeah.
So I was working while I was playing.
That's cool.
So the transition was super easy. So I started. So my agent then, when I retired, said to me, I want you to come work for us and do what you're doing and partner with us.
So
and
was Drew your agent too?
Drew was my agent.
No way. I didn't know that either.
He was my agent. Oh, okay. And then, you know, and at the same time as I'm retiring, I had NFL teams calling me saying they wanted me to coach.
So I was just about to ask you, did you have any kind of desire to coach?
Yeah, I wanted to coach.
You'd be a great coach.
I would have been an amazing coach.
A great coach.
I wanted to coach. And, you know, a lot of coaches reached out to me because they knew I was cerebral, you know, in terms of football. Yeah. And I wanted a coach, but I didn't want to give up more time away from my family, my kids. Remember, I played 11 years. Yeah. I'm like, you know.
And then coaching is brutal.
It's brutal.
It's more brutal than playing. Like
100%.
Because you can't turn it off.
Right.
Like,
because on Tuesdays, they're in early to work on the game plan.
Right,
they
right.
don't have an off day. And
every coach season, I know, it's like they do it 24/7. Like,
yeah, it's 24/7.
Literally.
A lot of coaches have issues with wives and trying to keep the family together and getting fired and then getting picked up somewhere else, having to pick up the family and move them, and the kids in high school and they got to switch high schools and you know they're mad because they got to leave their best friends and go try to make new friends, and some coaches leave their families behind just because the kids are like, I don't want to move, and they leave, or some kids stay with friends. And I've heard horror stories, but that was one of the reasons why I said, you know what, I get to stay in this industry by partnering with my agent, and you know, it's worked out great.
And you're still coaching.
Yeah, I still,
cause you're coaching one-on-one now, behind the scenes, you know?
I am 100%. Yeah. And 5 years later, I became the president of the company, and now it's been 25 years. And you know, we've signed a lot of amazing players, and I've been to multiple Hall of Fame speeches from our clients, and now NIL's in. So now I'm helping guys in the NFL, and I'm helping college guys with their maturity and their understanding of football, and helping them along the way as a mentor. And so I love it. I love it. It's what I was born to do.
Yeah, it sounds like it's literally what you're meant to do.
Yeah, so. What I was born to do.
I love how your experiences have led you to be able to influence people in a positive way, you know?
Well, experience is what molds you.
Yeah.
And we all know that, you know? Just like being in the gym.
Yeah.
You know, I go in the gym, I get underweight, I you know, tension, time under tension, as you said, and then you experience strength, and you experience getting bigger, and you go, whoa, if I keep doing this, this will happen. Well, if you don't take that concept of experience in your life and use it for something greater for your life, you're missing the boat. And that's what it's about.
Talk a little bit about, because I know for me, fitness is very much an anchor in my life.
Yeah.
And I've seen you obviously be really dedicated to that. What has fitness and that commitment to showing up for yourself every day, kind of how has that helped you in your journey?
Fitness to me is one of the most important aspects of not only my life, but I think in people. I think fitness dictates the rest of your day. Fitness dictates the decisions you are going to make. Fitness dictates your mental state. Fitness dictates everything. Everything. If you are not being physically, putting some physical demand on your body, then you are not living your life. I truly believe that there's a mental aspect to the connection of the physical, what you do physically in your body, right? When you lift weights or you run or you stretch or you do anything physical, your mind gives off certain chemicals that makes your body get better. If that's not enough, what fucking else do you want? That the physical nature of what you do every day, your mind reacts to that to make you better. How is there anything else?
Right.
Right? If you don't move, you die. And that is, you know, that is the
It staple. Sounds simple, but it's so true.
It's so true. And
the word move always stands out to me because I think a lot of people sit or wait for motivation, and moving daily is what creates the motivation.
Yes, yes.
And if we can get more into moving, then you're moving towards something. You're moving towards a better life. You're moving towards change.
Yes.
But if you're waiting on it, it's never going to come.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
You know, it's a part of my life. It's a part of my success. You know, I think of every aspect of my life, every timeline of my life, you know, what it doesn't matter what age, I don't remember being successful without being physical, without having some physical nature, whether I was running track, whether I was playing baseball, whether I was playing football, you know, at every stage, while I was just going outside, playing, riding bikes, jumping ramps, just doing something, it is a part of a healthy life.
Yeah.
And it's a major, major part of healthy life. Just as you see people working, and you know, you may see something, you know, people working in rice fields or working in the strawberry farms, and they're some of the most physically fit and mentally happy people, you know. And there's a reason, because there's an objective that, hey, yeah, you're gonna work and you wanna make money for your family, but there's a correlation with just constantly moving because you're doing something physical and having the success at the end of your life.
The two things stood out to me when you said that, especially people working on the field. It's the labor, but it's also the sunlight too.
Exactly.
You know, like there's like getting outside and getting that real life.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yes. Like there's something to be said about that for longevity.
There's a reason why every single living thing needs sunlight.
Yeah.
If you think about it, every single living thing needs sunlight. So if that's not enough, then again, you're missing the boat.
Yep.
You're missing the boat. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.